Well, I remember a number of things, but one of them that I do remember very well is Cousin David, Dr. David Stinson, Fred's younger brother, climbing up on precarious ladders to put the pulleys in there so we could have banners. We didn't have banners when I came here. And I'll never forget, he was the only one brave enough to put the ladder there and climb up that thing and put in those pulleys. And I do remember, Gene, Kenny Solway and Susan Graves coming into my office here and talking about a funny little orchestra that they wanted to start with this beautiful music. And there wasn't much going on. We said, sure, give it a try. Well, Papal Music, of course, is a world-renowned orchestra right now, and I'm so glad you're here, Gene, to come after a concert last night and be here this morning. Thank you for being here. I also remember Bernadette Devlin was somebody that was an IRA terrorist to some people, member of parliament, and in the height of the struggles between Ireland and England, she wasn't very popular among some people, but she came to Canada to raise money. And I was walking along Bloor Street one day, and there on a post box was a notice that she'd be speaking at this place from the pulpit. And my grandfather, Fred Stinson, was an Orangeman. Now, happily, he's at peace in Mount Pleasant. But I wondered whether there'd be an eruption in that cemetery if he heard that Bernadette Devlin was speaking here. It was part of the price we were paying to be a public place, to engage in public conversations. I remember in the first 6 months of being here, was the grape and lettuce boycott, and it took a lot of energy to try to get the congregation to think this was important, but I remember going and standing in front of the grapes in Dominion store across the street and praying over there. That was a whole other controversy that we spent a whole day talking about. I also remember Jim Houston's first drawings. Jim is here, and Jim is a wonderful artist. And he did some, he said, I think this is what we could do. And Jim in his way just went blah, 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 like this, and it was almost like this. So Jim and his drawings, not only that, but the newspaper he put out for the remissioning and so on. Also, the last night that I was, or in the last week that I was here, we were packing up to move from Major Street to Edmonton, and I remember being in the basement, still packing up stuff, covered in dirt and everything. I get a phone call, because there's a big public meeting here, and there's 1,000 people in this place. It's about health care, I think. Things don't change much, even though they change a lot. Anyway, the sound system, I mean, we had a terrible sound system. It was awful. And anyway, something was wrong, so they phoned me, and everybody knows me, knows I know nothing about sound systems, but there's nobody else. So anyway, I come up here, and there's this big thing going on, and here's Roy McMurtry, the Attorney General of Ontario, speaking. Emmett Hall, one of the fathers of Medicare. June Colwood, an old friend here. And Walter Pittman was here, too. And Walter was there. And where are you, Walter? Oh, there you are. You were up there in the platform, and there were some other wonderful people. And Judy Rebick was standing right where Walter is, in the center of the thing, yelling at McMurtry. Well, you know, only Judy can do that in a certain way. And I remember coming in that door and crawling along, filthy, trying to fix, you know, do these wires. And I didn't know who was here, trying to be inconspicuous. I'd look up and, oh, hi, June, how are you? And, oh, Walter, what are you doing? Anyway, that was the last week I was here. I remember that very well. And then, of course, baptizing my two children right in this place. And my mother's funeral taking place right in this place, remembering her marriage here by Colonel Fawless in 1934. Anyway, many, many memories, and I'm really happy to be celebrating this day in this place. When I was called to Trinity United Church in 1974, Bruce McLeod, I think, was the presbytery rep on that committee, and it's all your fault, Bruce. They told me when they decided to call me, they said, you are our last minister unless something happens. Well, what? No, there's no pressure at all. What a job description. Because what it said was, listen, go for it. If nothing happens, well, nothing happens. If something happens, well, that's all well and good. Well, something happened. And we got together and we struggled together and so on. I don't have time to go into the whole thing unless you want to be here for the rest of Mother's Day. But one of the key things, ingredients in the whole thing, there were two parts of the vision in my little mind that were important. One of them was that the church exists for the sake of the world and for the sake of the city. That's why we're here. Whatever that means. And the second thing is we have to do these things together in cooperation with community organizations, with other churches, other faith communities, and so on. So one of the things we tried to do, we brought together, the presbytery was organized into zones, and it reorganizes itself about every 5 minutes, I think. But anyway, we were organized into zones, and this was mid-city zone. And the congregations that were involved were St. Andrews, when they still had that beautiful old building at church in Bloor. St. Andrews, Bloor Street, the Korean United Church, Trinity, Bathurst, St. Paul's Avenue Road, up on Avenue Road in Davenport, and then Timothy Eaton, Deer Park, and Rosedale. I hope I haven't left anybody out. And that was called the Mid-City Zone Remissioning Project, and we hired Jim Houston as the staff person to help us get organized and to learn how to work together. Because a lot of those congregations mistrusted each other, didn't know each other, and all the rest of it. Of course, that's not true now. They all get along beautifully, right? Anyway, that was the idea. If we have to do these things together, what is the mission of the church in a changing world in mid-city Toronto? And how do we do this together? Well, the Trinity part of that thing, I mean, everybody had their own way of responding to it. The Trinity part was called TRIM, TRIM, and everybody had their own understanding of what that meant. Trinity Renews Its Mission was one of them, and some of you may remember the name Catherine Hawkins. Catherine Hawkins chaired that committee, and that was the Trinity response to the zone thing. And I was going to quote a whole lot of stuff, but I don't have time to do that. But I do have one line from Catherine's interim report to the congregation, and actually the front of it has one of Jim's drawings about the mid-city. And one of the things she said was this: therefore, God's people, the church as the body of Christ, really exists not for itself, but for this varied, multicultural, and plural world. And of course, the thing went on, and we had debates and all the rest of it around that time as we tried to have our congregations come together with a renewed sense of ministry and mission within the heart of a great city. During that time, Catholic music took root here and began to play its wonderful music in this place. And other justice organizations, the World the World Student Christian Federation were the first justice group to come in, and they had an office back in there in an old Sunday school room. And one of the other things that we did was, one of the things that we did was the Adventions. Remember the Adventions, Jim? Advention was a convention taking place during Advent. I think it was Jim's idea. Was it Stuart's? It was your idea, Stuart. And Stuart was one of the key people in all of these things. And after Bruce left Fleur Street, Cliff Elliott was there, and Cliff came on board. The Adventions, and we had them in Trinity, and we had them at Timothy Eaton. About 10 delegates from each congregation came for a whole Saturday, and we told our stories about our congregations, what was working, what was not working, and we tried to share a common vision of how we could work together. Those were great events, and they were lots of fun, and they broke down some of the distrust, actually, among the congregation. Now, the big thing for this group, actually, was the coming together of St. Paul's Avenue Road, historic building, church up on Avenue Road near Davenport, and Trinity. Now, that wasn't all that easy. Some of you will remember the discussions and the debates and so on. But at St. Paul's Avenue Road, they had St. Paul's Center, and they were using their building very creatively for social justice groups. Well, Trinity was a little more conservative, you know. They weren't sure about all these groups. And so the negotiations went on, and the idea came out through the remissioning project and through the TRIM project here that maybe the St. Paul Center groups could come here. We'd sell that building, and the congregation and the groups would come here. That's a good idea. But the Trinity people said, well, that's fine. We'd love to have them except for Greenpeace. Well, there was a little group at St. Paul's Avenue. They were big, but they were tough. Right, Lynn? Paul was one of them, and his mother. And back and forth, back and forth. You either take all of us or none of us. Well, we took all. So the congregation came, and the St. Paul Center came, set up shop in the back. And then the question about the congregations. Well, St. Paul's Avenue Road didn't want to amalgamate because they thought Trinity was too big and strong and they didn't want to be overwhelmed. Well, compared to Bloor, we weren't big and strong, but we were big and strong compared to this. So what happened was a two-point pastoral charge for about a year where St. Paul's Avenue Road worshipped in the chapel and Trinity worshipped here, and we kept talking until St. Paul's Avenue Road actually trusted the folks enough at Trinity to come together in amalgamation, which of course happened. There were many things that went on in that period of time. I think during all of these, all of this time, the major thing we were trying to do was to get the faith communities in this part of town to cooperate in serving the needs of the city. And one of the things we did was we surveyed all the social agencies, the hospitals, the social workers, the police, the fire department, the schools, people who are on the front line of dealing with people in this part of town. And we had what is now called focus groups, where we brought people together to talk and debate and so on. And you know, one of the phrases that caught on, more than any other phrase to me, at least in my little memory, was the police. When we said, what would you do with a building like this, two subway lines, etc.? Like, that was the question. What would you do with this amount of space? And the police said, what this community needs more than anything else is space for humanization and freedom. That ain't bad. So the vision became this place becoming public space for people to engage with each other about human needs, about the needs of the city, and about who we are as human beings. And so cooperation, that kind of vision about why the church is needed and so on, in to put it in contemporary language, living out a holistic view of earthly life where everything is connected. For the exploration of faith, where we seek justice, and the arts helping us do that as totally complementary in our understanding of life and what life is all about. And that's the vision that emerged, and it really meant turning the church inside out, not only for the sake of the city, but for the love of the city. For the love of the city and its beauty and its wonder and its messiness and its mystery and all of those kinds of things. Well, I believe that, oh, I got to say one little thing, particularly with Jean here. It did my heart so much good. You know, I lived down the street, to walk into work. I mean, what a great job. Walk into work, and here's this beautiful orchestra rehearsing. To walk into this beautiful music here, and in that part of the building, all these justice groups organizing to change the world. Like, what a great place to work, where these things are coming together, and they feed each other, they complement each other, and they are who we are. Well, I believe that the vision that was then there is here now. And in fact, I have a very strong belief that after the election on Monday, places like this and other places that I know of around our country are needed more than ever. Our society, our cities, need what goes on in this place and the people who are here bringing life and vitality and love and care into the world. This is our time. I think our time more than ever. Our scripture lessons actually challenge us in this quite a way. I love the vision of Isaiah. Whenever I get the guest preacher or anything like that, I always choose this passage. It's the only one I know, I guess, in the whole Bible. And of course, some of you who were here when I was here will remember all the sermons ad nauseum about this passage. But it's beautifully done, and it brings together justice seeking and ecological understanding. The Bible's full of ecology, just we don't recognize it most of the time. Says this, when we do justice, pretty simple actually, when we do justice, our light will break forth like the dawn. That's what true worship is, according to Isaiah. Well, the whole bunch of them there. Not only that, you will be like a watered garden. Now, can you imagine that imagery in the desert where gardens and water is so precious? And Isaiah says, when you do justice, when you care for this, these kinds of people and this and this and this, when you do that, you are like a watered garden. And the waters will never fail. That's what the vision is from Isaiah, and I believe it's one that is so important now. It's a vision of justice, ecological integrity, cities of hope and beauty. And then, of course, in the Luke story, we have the old thing about when you break bread together, when you do that, your eyes are opened. That is, when we share life across all the boundaries which we create, healing, hope, and companionship happen. Luke was pretty simple, too. You share your life with the life of the city, and good things happen, and people feel loved and cared for, and so on. The Earth Charter talks about that too. I was going to read some of it, but I don't have time to do that. But read the preamble of the Earth Charter. It's an amazing document. You'd think Stuart Coles wrote it. Maybe you did, Stuart. I don't know, but it talks about the integration of all life as being part of earthly health and beauty and wonder and justice and mystery and all the rest of that. And have anybody heard Carolyn McDade's CD based on the Earth Charter with her choirs from around North America? It's a beautiful thing. In his book called The Great Turning, David Corton challenges us. He says, what will our children know of our generation? How will our generation be characterized by our children and grandchildren? What will they call it? Will they call it the Great Unraveling? Or, says David, will they call it the time of transformation, the great turning to a transformation? Will our grandchildren see our time as the great unraveling or the great turning to hope and love and peace and justice? Well, for me, the arts are essential in our living this thing out. It's not just another little component, you know. It's essential to a vision of faith development, justice seeking, peace building, and earth healing. Now, I am gonna read this because someone you know wrote it. Just listen to these words. Really good. Men and women in the 21st century will need access to the ways by which transformation is possible. Throughout the ages, great songs, poems, novels, drama, and music have moved minds and hearts towards greater understanding and self-realization. They have provided the images which have impelled us to act in the best interest of ourselves and the collective. The power of the arts to arouse compassion and generosity of spirit is well recognized. The arts will be essential. Who wrote that? Walter Pittman wrote that. in a wonderful book called Learning the Arts in an Age of Uncertainty. It's worth reading again. And thank you, Walter, for those words, because they tell us how important the arts are. And there's one other one I want to quote because it's right on to this congregation and who we are. And this is by an artist and an Episcopal priest in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. She's a friend of Carolyn's and mine, and she does wonderful visual art, and she's a priest in a downtown Episcopal church. And she says this about her art: What my artwork wants to say is this: life is to be honored and celebrated. In spite of all the violence and suffering and atrocities around us, we have the capacity for working with God as co-creators to birth an alternative vision of what the world could be if beauty, justice, hope, and peace were given the proper place in the scheme of things. So you see, what you are about here is exactly those things. Beauty, wonder, care for the earth are at the heart of seeking justice and deepening faith. So that's why I believe that this is our time. This is our time when we are needed more than ever in the complex realities of the city and the world beyond. You see, spiritual hunger, evident in personal lives, is connected to a hunger to understand our collective purpose, who we are, how we are to live together sustainably in our beautiful world, and how we are to live together with all the other life forms in this multifaceted world, the multifaceted city life in which we live, and the earth herself. Spiritual hunger leads to all earth community not escape from the troubles of our times. So this is our time. And which will it be? Will it be a great unraveling? Or will it be a great turning to transformation of a world in which our grandchildren and seven generations beyond that will live in peace and harmony and so on? That's the challenge. And what you are doing in understanding the coming together and the complementarity of faith development, justice seeking, and the arts helps that to happen. And they are all essential in our living out this vision. I started off with a bunch of vignettes about my time here. I'm going to end with another one, but not of my time here. Last summer, Carolyn and I were camping with Sarah and Don and Kate and Foster on Manitoulin Island. We were camping. And one morning, I took my coffee out and came out and walked on the rocks with Lake Huron spreading out there. It was a gorgeous morning. And I had my cup of coffee. I'm standing on the rocks. And I hear a little voice, and I turn around, and there's 3.5-year-old Kate at this time coming out from the forest where our campsite was onto the rock. And she stood there, and this is absolutely true. Memory's gone, but it's not gone that much. Absolutely true. She stands there, she throws her arms up like this, and she says, "Oh, what a beautiful world." I have tears in my eyes, I do now. What you are doing here, along with sisters and brothers all over this country and around the world, are trying to ensure that it is so. And may it be so. Amen.